Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on taxes when we come back. Well, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's pretty obvious that something is dead wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they teach these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, practice them in our public institutions, and we have made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect. Now, whether you call it the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which is the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request. That's a request for the General Law CD package, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about taxes this week. Taxes, the income tax, Social Security tax, 14 taxes that you pay. It's not all of the taxes. There's 480 tax forms. If you're not paying the tax directly, we call that a hidden tax. Hidden taxes cost you 16% of everything you create and produce, the same amount that you pay for Social Security. Social Security and the income tax take one-third of everything that you create and produce. All told, your tax bill, of course, depending upon how much money you make, if you're in the $100,000 bracket, middle class, firmly ensconced, you're paying 74% of everything you create and produce in taxes. And don't think that you're not paying the tax if you can't add it up, because remember the hidden taxes on a McDonald's hamburger, there are 257 of those hidden taxes. So if you're not paying the tax, then you're giving the money in the price of the product to the guy that is paying the tax. And that's why so many people find that their incomes are not sufficient to meet their expenses, and they find themselves in debt using credit cards and their homes, the equities in their homes, as the ATM machine to maintain their standard of living. But you know, boys and girls, that's coming to an end. At some point in time, you max out your credit cards, and at some point in time, you max out the equity in your home. Now what are you going to do? So I would contend that before you max out the equity in your credit cards and your homes, maybe you'd better think of a new plan. And the new plan is, how much could you save on your taxes if you didn't pay these 14 taxes? And the answer is about 75%. Now, you're not going to get away from the hidden taxes, and you're not going to get away from the property taxes. And yeah, you're not going to make 75% savings, but what if you could save a third? You know, just take your income, $100,000 a year, $50,000 a year, $10,000 a year. Then figure out how much tax are you paying. Well, if you're at the lower end, it's 50%, and anything from the low end to the upper middle class, it's 75%. And if you're making over $100,000 a year, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, you're in fat city, because your percentage tax rate goes way down. Way down. You're not paying. You know, the rich people in our society don't pay very much tax. They pay some, but they don't pay very much. And percentage-wise, it's the little guy down at the bottom making minimum wage that pays the highest percentage. And the final analysis. Now, I mentioned to you that Social Security is a voluntary institution. And I mentioned to you that there are taxpayers and non-taxpayers. Let's take a look at that for a minute. I have a number of letters that I've collected over the years from the Social Security Administration. It comes from the Commissioner of Social Security. Here's one dated August 6, 1984. Sent to one of my students. Paragraph 2, it says, every worker is free to choose employment that is not covered by Social Security. How's that? So that's what I did. I chose employment that is not covered by Social Security. And one of the things that I hear people say is, why, everything's covered by Social Security. No, it isn't. It might well be that you don't know of anything that isn't covered by Social Security, but that doesn't mean that there aren't some employments that are not covered by Social Security. And that's because Social Security tells you plainly, every worker is free to choose employment that is not covered by Social Security. And they went on to say in another letter to another student of mine, he said, there is no law requiring a person to apply for a Social Security number, and there is no section in Title 18 of the U.S. Code making it a crime not to have a Social Security number. So Social Security is voluntary. A third letter, and this one comes from the Department of Health and Human Services, Social Security Administration, dated January 10th, 1986. Social Security is a voluntary system in that no one is required to get a number. Now you think about that for a minute. Your parents probably got your number for you when you were born. If they didn't, you went down and applied for the number in order to obtain one. I remember when I got mine, I was about 11 years old. I wanted to deliver newspapers for the Humboldt Standard in Eureka, California. Wayne Davenport was the route manager. He came out and said, does your son have a Social Security number? My dad said, no. And he said, you can't deliver newspapers until you get one. So I went down and got one. I wanted to deliver newspapers. But there's no legal requirement to get one. Well, you know, if you want to work, you have to get one. That's right. If you want to work, you have to get one. But I've said it before and I'll say it again. There's no money in employment. Who in the hell wants to work? The money's in sales. The money's in business. The money's in private business. So if you want to make money, forget work. Now, in a case called Stewart versus Chinese Chamber of Commerce, cited at 168 Fed 2nd 709, on page 712, here's what we read. If you didn't get that, Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T, versus Chinese Chamber of Commerce. I don't have a year for it, but it's cited at 168 Fed 2nd. Pretty old case. 168 Fed 2nd on page 709. The site we want is on page 712. It says the revenue laws are a code or system in regulation of tax assessment and collection. The revenue laws relate to taxpayers and not to non-taxpayers. No procedure is prescribed for non-taxpayers. and no attempt is made to annul any of their rights and remedies in due course of law. With them, Congress does not assume to deal, and they are neither of the subject nor of the object of the revenue laws. Did you catch that, boys and girls? I remember we've been talking this week about taxpayers and non-taxpayers. This is Stewart versus Chinese Chamber of Commerce. And the appellate court said that the revenue laws are a code or system in regulation of tax assessment and collection. If you're a taxpayer and you generate tax liability, you should file and pay your taxes. These regulations relate to taxpayers. They do not relate to non-taxpayers. I'm one of those. I used to be a taxpayer, and I looked at this and I said, you know, I'd like to be one of those non-taxpayers. A non-taxpayer. Notice here that no attempt is made to annul any of the non-taxpayers' rights or remedies in due course of law. Nobody's after me. Nobody will be after you if you become a non-taxpayer. But, boy, are they going to be after you if you are a taxpayer. Government's only after taxpayers. They're not after non-taxpayers. And remember, with them, Congress does not assume to deal. Congress doesn't deal with non-taxpayers. They're only concerned about taxpayers. And the rules and regulations promulgated by Congress and the agencies that they delegate their authority to are aimed at taxpayers. Now, to our knowledge, no organization can require an employer to provide or deny employment to people who refuse to disclose their Social Security numbers. That's been changed. Now, three cases have come up before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, yes, they can. All right, so now we've been corrected. So if you walk into McDonald's and say, I want a job, and they say, well, what's your Social Security number? And you say, I don't have one. They say, well, we're not going to hire you without one. They don't have to. It's a franchise by government. The corporation is a franchise by government. And if you want to work for the franchise, you have to have a Social Security number. It wasn't always that way, but it is now. Now, your Social Security number and record will not be used at all unless you yourself activate the record by using it for employment or for other purposes. And whether or not you use your Social Security number is a personal decision that you must make each time someone requests it. So if somebody asks me what my Social Security number is, I tell them I don't have one. They almost invariably say, oh, you have to have one. It's the law. I didn't know. Then I ask them, well, could you cite the law to me? And they all look at you like, no, I can't. Okay. So if you want to look up the law that requires you to have a Social Security number, if it's there anywhere, it'll be in Title 42, Section 301 through 335. If it's there, that's where you're going to find it. I don't think you're going to find one there. I read it and I couldn't find it. Now, a lot of times people will say to me, you can't tell me that I have a contract with government and that's what obligates me to pay the Social Security tax. You're right, partner, and I'm not here to tell you that. So when somebody says, you can't tell me, I always agree with them. I tell them, you're right. You're right. And I'll shut up and I won't tell you. But these contracts that you have are called adhesion contracts. Spelled A-D-H-E-S-I-O-N, adhesion contracts. And the Patriot community has been battling statutes requiring specific performance for years now and with wide and varied results. And we've been asking, well, where's the contract that gives government these powers over us? And receiving deafening silence in reply. You're not going to find any government official. First of all, government officials probably don't know. Judicial officials know. And people that are involved with Congress probably don't know. Probably. They ought to. After all, they're called lawmakers. But they probably know. So look up adhesion contracts in your Bouvier Law Dictionary and I think you'll find it. One of the great generalizations about social history is the thesis of Sir Henry Maine that the history of progressive societies may be described as a movement from status to contract. That's where you're at. See, your great-granddad had status, and you don't. You have contract. You're now a ward of the state. And probably not just a ward of the state in one area. You probably are a ward of the state in a number of areas. You probably have 6 or 8 of these contracts with the state that bind you to some form of specific performance. And they all vary. You know, you probably don't have a PIC program or a land bank set-aside program. But if you're a farmer, you might. So that's a spider web that entangles the farmer, but it doesn't entangle the machinist, you know, working at Lockheed Martin. And probably the farmer and the machinist at Lockheed Martin both have social security numbers and or they may even have taxpayer identification numbers. They might have several of these adhesion contracts. They might have 1 or 2. But there's a potential for 37 that I know of. There could be more, but I know of 37 that you could have. I never met anybody that had all 37, but I've met people that have 6, 8, or 10. Most people will have 6, 8, or 10. You may have a military enlistment. You may have, you know, you could be an officer in the Army. And you've been discharged and you're 72 years old. You could be called to active duty in the morning. There was a story about an old doctor down in Florida. He was 72 years old, been retired for years. But he was a captain in the Army, and he was a brain specialist, you know, a neurosurgeon. And they needed guys like that, so they just drafted him, just called him back to active duty, sent him off to Afghanistan. And he was a little piece in the paper about him, and he said he was real surprised. I'm surprised at how many of you people that have commissions in the Army or the military. You have commissions, and when you get called back to active duty, you're just as surprised as you can be. I don't know why. You could be 110 years old, retired for 40 years, and called to active duty in the morning. That commission obligates you to military service until you die. You got a lot of people with commissions, they don't know that. Just ignorant, I guess. Well, through all of its course, it's been distinguished by the gradual dissolution of family dependency and the growth of individual obligation in its place. The society is gradually substituted for the family as the unit of which civil law takes account. Now, under the common law, the family is dominant. Under the civil law, the state is dominant. Nor is it difficult to see what is the tie between man and man, which replaces by degrees those forms of reciprocity in rights and duties which have their origin in the family, and that is contract. Well, boys and girls, when you sign up for the military, you get a commission in the military. Those are contracts. Now, the contract itself, you know, the commission from the Army, it doesn't say we can call you up to active duty until you're 110. That's contained in the statutes. Got to tell you a little story here when we come to it. Out of all of this came also the widespread use of warranty clauses in the machine industry, limiting the common law remedies of the buyer to a breach of an implied warranty of quality, and particularly your right to claim damages. These standardized contracts have thus become an important means of excluding or controlling the irrational factor of a jury in litigation and belong in the same category as codifications. Now, this comes from Kessler on Contracts of Adhesion, Some Thoughts About Freedom of Contract, delivered in the 43 Columbia Law Review, page 629. 1943, Columbia Law Review, 43rd edition. Kessler on Contracts. Hey, you ever go into Walmart and buy a toaster? And then inside the box, there's this warranty card. Now, you know what a warranty is, don't you? I know you think you do, but you probably don't. You think that a warranty is a guarantee. Well, if it was a guarantee, why do we call it a warranty? That kind of sounds similar, and they're both cards that you fill out. But a guarantee is a unilateral declaration, and a warranty is a bilateral agreement. So there's this bilateral agreement in the box, and it says, fill this out and send it in to General Electric. And if the toaster breaks or if it becomes inserviceable, you send it back. Or if it kills you or somebody else, if it killed you, warranty. It's warranted. What does that mean? That means that under the terms of the contract that you've signed with this warranty bilateral agreement, you agree to hold General Electric harmless in the event that there's a wrongful death action. How do I know that? Well, here's the way it works. See, General Electric is in the business of making profit and gain, and they're not in the business of getting sued for wrongful death because some of their toasters kill people. And, you know, if you're going to manufacture millions of toasters, there's going to be one or two of them that kill somebody. This life. And if it kills somebody, it may cost us $1 million or $2 million, and we want to eliminate that cost. So here's the way we do that. We write up a warranty, which is an agreement between customer and General Electric, and we file that contract, that agreement, with the Secretary of State in Hartford, Connecticut. Then we sell you the toaster in Sacramento, California, in the friendly Walmart store. In the Walmart store, they sell you the toaster and encourage you to send in the warranty card, which is contained in the box, and when you send it in, you've completed the bilateral agreement that binds you to the terms and conditions of the contract, which limits the liability of General Electric to replacement or repair of the toaster in the event of a wrongful death action on paragraph 18. Now, that doesn't appear on the warranty card, but it appears in the terms and conditions of the contract which you agreed to be bound to. And the same thing happens when you open a checking account. You walk into the bank. Just read it for yourself. As they say at the Blue Room, read them and weep. You know, when the dealer deals the cards out, well, read them and weep, boys. So that's what happens when you sign this warranty card. Sign the warranty card, and that warranty card becomes a bilateral agreement. It's called an adhesion contract. Contracts of adhesion. I also said that I was going to share with you Wolf Company versus Industrial, court cited at 262 U.S. 522. Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, 1923, 262 U.S. 522. Reading from the syllabus, we learn that businesses said to be clothed with a public interest justifying some public regulation may be divided into three classes. So if you got a pen and paper out there, boys and girls, be sure to write down 1, 2, and 3. Three classes of business. They can be regulated. Those businesses which are carried on under authority of a public grant of privilege, expressly or impliedly imposing the affirmative duty of rendering public service demanding any member of the public, or demanded rather by any member of the public, such as the business of a common carrier or a public utility. So there's a class of businesses out here like Garrett Truck Lines, Yellow Freight, United Airlines. Or it could be a public utility, you know, like Pacific Gas and Electric or Continental Edison or whatever. And those types of businesses are going to be regulated and controlled, period. They get their life from the legislature and their corporations and they're regulated and controlled entities. And so if you want to go into public utilities or you want to go into common carrier or something like that, hey, listen, a lot of money in it. A lot of people do it. But just expect to be taxed, regulated, and controlled. Second class of businesses are certain occupations regarded as exceptional, the public interest attaching to which, recognized from earliest times, has survived the period of arbitrary regulation of all trades and callings by Parliament or colonial legislatures, such as inns, cabs, and grist mills. So if you want to operate a motel, hotel, Holiday Inn, yellow cab, or a grist mill, then you can be regulated and controlled because you hold yourself out to the public. And here's the key. It's if you affect trade, if you affect commerce, if you affect business, if you affect industry in any public capacity, you can be regulated and controlled. So if you're going to engage in trade, commerce, business, or industry, you have to do it privately so that it doesn't affect any public interest. And that's why we don't advertise. See? If we advertised, then we would be affecting a public interest, and then government would knock on my door and they'd say, hey, we got to regulate and control you because you affect trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting a public interest. That's why the law school is private, not open to the public. It's the way it has to be. And that's why it isn't covered by Social Security. And while teaching, as a general rule, is an employment, and while teaching, most teachers have Social Security numbers, you can have a private school and employ private teachers without Social Security numbers, and they're not taxable. Well, if they don't affect trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting a public interest. Now, there's a lot of ways that you can affect trade, commerce, business, and industry. A lot of ways that you can affect public interest. Denny's is open to the public. Denny's takes MasterCard and Visa. We don't take MasterCard and Visa, and we don't even take Federal Reserve notes, sir. So if you come here with your checkbook, you're going to be sad. If you come here with Federal Reserve notes, you can't go to school. You can't pay the tuition. Now, I've mentioned this to people, and sometimes people get a little cocky, you know, and they'll say, well, this is crazy. I never said that it was sane. I didn't make these rules. I've never sat in any public office. I've never been a representative or a senator. Don't blame me. And furthermore, don't blame God either, because he didn't saddle you with all these crazy laws and these rules and regulations and adhesion contracts and frauds and unethical cheating, lying, and stealing from you. That didn't come from God. He told you thou shalt not steal, remember? But, hey, listen, these adhesion contracts are binding on you whether you like them or not. I'm just reporting facts. Now, well, they shouldn't. Well, I agree with you, they shouldn't, but they do. When you go down and sign up with the military, you know, sign your enlistment contract, all the terms and conditions of your enlistment are not contained on that document. Many of them are recorded in the statutes. Did you read all the statutes relating to military service? Did you read the Uniform Code of Military Justice? Do you understand what you're getting into, son, when you go down there and you sign up? See, I don't think most of these people that sign up for the military understand the terms and conditions of the agreement. And your military service can be extended. I remember in World War II, my dad was in for the duration of the war. If the war lasted 3.5 years, he was in for 3.5 years. If the duration of the war was 35 years, then he was in for 35 years. Now, President Bush hasn't minced any words. He said, this war on terror is going to be a war that is going to last a long time, and he indicated decades. Now, as a matter of law, boys and girls, when you go down and sign up for the Army, you could be sent to Iraq, and you could be extended in your service until the day you die of old age at 110, as a matter of law. There isn't anything secret about it. And the fact that they only extend your enlistment or your tour of duty for 6 months or 9 months or a year just shows you what wonderful people the president and the Republicans and the military are. Boys and girls, when you sign the enlistment contract, you're in for the duration of the war. The president said this duration of the war on terror is going to take 10, 20, or 30 years. I think before you go down and sign that enlistment contract, you should take that into consideration. In any event, if you decide that you want to join the Army, or you've already joined and you're already in, you know, they just extend you 6 months or 9 months. They're not doing it for 10, 20, or 30 years. In my dad's case, you know, he joined the Army for 6 years. And by the way, when you join the Army, you're joining for six. No Hebrew can be held for longer than 7 years, remember? Year of release comes in there. And government, at least our Anglo-Saxon governments, we follow the Mosaic law as it relates to bondservants and Hebrew bondservants. Military doesn't take you for longer than 6 years. But you're in for 6 years. It's 2 years active, 2 years inactive, and 2 years reserve. So tuck it away in your heart. And then if you get a commission while you're in there, think about it, because that commission, signed by the president, means that you can be called to active duty at any time. Number three over here, other businesses which have come to have such a peculiar relation to the public that government regulations, or regulation rather, has been superimposed upon them. Where the owner, by devoting his business to the public use, in effect grants the public an interest in that use. And he subjects himself to regulation to the extent of such an interest. This is why you get business permits or business licenses. I don't have a business license. I don't have a business permit. I'm not open to the public. I don't affect trade, commerce, business, or industry. I'm not affecting a public interest. I don't take credit cards. We don't use unjust weights and balances. We practice the Ten Commandments. We practice all of the statutes, judgments, and commandments of the Mosaic Law. And we do not practice the laws that conflict with. We don't practice the law of Missouri if it conflicts with the Mosaic Law. And there's not very many of those. There's a few. Census is an example. The census law requires, it's a law of what we call general applicability, and it affects everybody. Everybody has to participate in the census except those that are exempted. And in Title 13, Section 224D, I believe it is the exemption that we claim. Most laws have those exemptions. Hang on, we'll be back with more on Wolf Company versus Industrial Court right after this. Hey, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, here's the kicker here in Wolf Company versus Industrial Court, and that is that the option to deal or to abstain from dealing usually distinguishes private from quasi-public occupations. It's your ability or your capacity to deal or to abstain from dealing with somebody. Now, you walk into Denny's and you sit down and the waitress comes over and says, "Oh my God, you've got blonde hair. We don't serve blondes in here. Get out." See, Denny's can't deal with that kind of a discriminatory claim because Denny's as a corporation comes under Hale versus Hinkle, and as a result of that, they're regulated and controlled. I'm not. I could do that. You could walk in my door. I could say, "Oh my God, you're blonde, get out." And you could sue me, and I don't think you're going to get very far. And that's because we're not open to the public. Now, we let blondes in here. You don't have to be real smart to go to school here. And so, shucks, we take you in here even if you're blonde. And I say you don't have to be real smart. You know, you got to be smarter than the average bureaucrat, though. You got to be smarter than the average preacher or politician, or you won't do very well. I mean, you can come to school, but I don't think you'll succeed in life. All right. Now, with that out of the way, let's take a look at what God told us to do and what our punishments and penalties are. You know, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. Do you know that? Now, it is true that you can go to Flo's place and tear off a piece on Friday night, and you won't always get AIDS, herpes, and VD. But then AIDS, herpes, and VD isn't just the only penalty that you're going to get down at Flo's. But I need to bring your attention to a couple of three statutes in here. And primarily, many people, when they get into trouble, they really hit the panic switch. So let me say this, that before you're going into sentencing next Thursday, and you're thinking about calling the law school, and you're thinking about, well, gee, maybe I ought to look into this a little bit. You know, normal people, they don't call the law school until they've already been convicted, or they're going in for sentencing, and they've already spent all their money on lawyers. I always loved this one. They spend all their money on lawyers, and then they call me and they say, "Well, I'm broke. I've been convicted. I'm going to sentencing next week. So now I'm going to give you a chance, Mr. Gordon. I'm going to give you the opportunity of bailing my chestnuts out of the fire. And I don't have any money to pay you, so you should do this pro bono. Because I spent all my money on attorneys and on legal fees and all that stuff. And so now I'm flat-ass broke. And they were unable to save me. But, you know, you say you're so damn smart, then why don't you save me and do it free?" That's the kind of customer I love. And we get quite a few of those. And of course, they're very sad. You know, very, very sad when I tell them, "Well, and at this juncture of the game, you can probably bend over, put your head between your knees, and kiss her goodbye." That's about the best advice I can give you. I always remember people, you know, when they get cancer, they go to the medical doctors, they go through the cut, burn, and poison process, they go through the chemotherapy, destroy their immune system, and then when they're on their last legs, they call the school and they say, "Well, we're going to give you a chance. We spent all our money on doctors, and we're just flat broke and got no money. And I heard that there's seven cures to cancer, and we'd like to try one of those now. Would you tell us what it is?" You know, the seven cures to cancer work for those people that still have an immune system left. I mean, your immune system can be compromised, your immune system can be damaged, your immune system can be suppressed, but it can't be dead. I feel bad for people, you know, they say, "Well, my hair all fell out and I went through the chemotherapy thing and the cancer came back and now I'm about ready to die. I'm going to give you a chance, Mr. Gordon, and you can do this free. I spent $100,000 on the doctors." All right, so let's take a look here. You know, God told us a long time ago, said, "Hey, listen, boys and girls, gather around And let me tell you a little story here. So in Leviticus 26, in Deuteronomy chapter 28, write this down. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Two chapters. First 14 verses. I'm not going to read all this to you because if I did that, we'd be here all afternoon. And I'm running out of time. You know, I've only got another 20 minutes. But he said to us in Deuteronomy 28, he said, you'll be blessed in the city and blessed in the field, and I'll bless you in everything that you put your hand to. This is what's going to come to pass. And he said, you'll be blessed and will be the fruit of your body. You won't have any birth defects. And the fruit of your ground, and the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your kind, and the increase of your sheep. Blessed shall you be your basket and store. You'll have plenty of everything. Plenty of food, plenty of money in the bank, plenty of everything. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. I mean, he's not going to give you all these neat deals. I'll make you the head and not the tail. About verse 15, he comes in and he says, now, it'll come to pass, if you will not hearken unto me. Now, if you won't listen to the voice of the Eternal, your God, you give me the finger, in short, to observe to do all of these commandments. Notice the word all, underlined that, all of these commandments. I don't think 15, 20, or 25 are satisfactory. There's 759, and he says all. He wants you to do all 759. People say to me, that's impossible, you can't do that. I don't know why. You got 2,000 traffic statutes in your traffic code, and you don't have any problem following 2,000 laws of Massachusetts. What the hell is so tough about 750? If you can do 2,000 for California, can't you do 700 for yourself? Go tell the judge next time, you know, you get a traffic ticket. Well, judge, you're unfair and unreasonable. Nobody can practice 2,000 traffic codes. I think he's going to say, well, then what in the hell did you sign the driver's license for and say you agreed to it? If you can't practice all the traffic codes, turn your license in. I think that's what he's going to tell you. So God said he wanted you to do all of his commandments, not some, and all of his statutes, not just two or three, and that I command you this day, and all of these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. Now, the rest of the chapter deals with curses. He says, here's what I'm going to do to you. I'm going to kick your hiney up one side and down the other. Now, you're going to wish to you-know-who that you'd never been born by the time I get done with. That's what my daddy used to say, these famous old sayings. He said, you're going to wish to you-know-who for doing that. He'd say, you'll wish to that you had. The FCC says I got to watch my language. All right, so I just thought I'd share that with you. Now, about 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 18. 1 Samuel 8, 18. Our great-great-granddaddy's long, long time ago, this is around 1000 B.C., and this is 2000 A.D., so about 3,000 years ago. Our great-great-granddaddy's, my great-great-granddaddy Gordon was standing right there, and he said, we want a king like all the nations around us. He told God that. My great-great-granddaddy had a lot of gonads, didn't he? Said right there to God, he said, hey, we want a king. We don't like your law, we don't like you, we don't want you ruling over us, we ain't following your law, we want a king. So, through the chapter here, you can read this chapter in about 15 minutes. There's only 22 verses, and they're fairly short. And he said, well, that's a mistake. And he told Samuel, who was the chief judge, he said, hey, Sam, tell these jerks that, you know, they got their head up the wrong end of their anatomy and that they ought to reconsider this. And so Sam did. And the people said, well, nevertheless, verse 19 said, nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we will have a king over us. So, you know, even after God said, hey, go rethink this. Go take this back to the drawing boards and see what you can come up with, but this isn't going to fly. And we said, nevertheless, we're going to have a king. To hell with you. So God, you know, big broad-minded guy that he is, says, okay, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success here, troops. But, he said, and this is in verse 18, he says, and you will cry out to me in that day because of your king which you shall have chosen you, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. So now when you're having tax trouble, and when you're up against it, you know, and they're extending your military commitment, you know, for another 6 months or a year in Iraq, don't waste your time praying to Jesus, because Jesus said, I ain't going to hear this crap. I ain't listening to that. All right. Now, there's a way out of this. I'm not saying, you know, that you're trapped forever, but it's just that you can save your breath. Don't waste your time praying. I know the preachers, you know, the 501c3 guys, you know, they say, oh, you should pray to Jesus. I don't know why they tell you that, because Jesus said, don't call me, I'll call you. But they always tell you to go pray. Well, if you want to pray, go ahead. But it won't solve your problem. You're wasting your breath. There's a solution to your problem, but that ain't it. Solution to the problem, but that won't fly. That duck don't fly. All right, now let me give you another one over here. In Deuteronomy 1, verse 45, there's an example of how that duck don't fly. And so in Deuteronomy 1, verse 45, he said, quote, and you returned and you wept before the Eternal. But the Lord would not hearken to your voice, nor give ear unto you. So you can pray and you can cry a lot if you want to. But your tears aren't going to move him to action either. Okay, so you can forget prayers and you can forget tears. Those ducks don't fly. Now, in Leviticus chapter 26, verses 38 through 43, tells you a little piece of the puzzle over here. Leviticus 26. Now, just bear with me. If you don't have a Bible, just write these down. You can go read them at your leisure. Starting in verse 38. This is Leviticus 26, verse 38. And here's God. Now, he comes along. He says, now, you will perish among the heathen, and the land of your enemy shall eat you up. Today we'd say they're going to eat your lunch. And they that are left of you, the survivors, shall pine away in their iniquity in their enemy's lands, that's national captivity and deportation, and also in the iniquities of their fathers shall they pine away with them. Fathers and sons are going together. And if they shall confess their iniquity, and the iniquity means lawlessness. Now, if you confess your iniquity, and you confess your lawlessness, and the iniquity of your fathers, with their trespass, which they have trespassed against me, and that they also have walked contrary to me, gave me the finger. Now, you admit that. And that I also have walked contrary unto them, and have brought them into the land of their enemies. If then their uncircumcised hearts be humbled, okay, a little humility here goes a long ways, and they then accept of the punishment of their iniquity. Uh-oh. If you will accept the punishment of your iniquity, go to jail, shut up, serve your time, and then when you get out, we can start this game over. He then goes on to say, then will I remember my covenant. I will remember the contract, boys and girls, that we have, the contract with Jacob, and also my covenant with Isaac, and also my covenant with Abraham, will I remember, and I will remember the land. All right. Now, the land is the basis of all property. All private property comes out of the land. And this contract deals with the land. And in verse 33, the land also shall be left of them, and shall enjoy her Sabbaths while she lies desolate without them, and they shall accept of the punishment of their iniquity, because even because they despised my judgments, and because their soul abhorred my statutes. Now, boys and girls, Americans prefer to practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto than to practice the 10 commandments. I think it's going to come back and bite you in the butt. That's my considered opinion. But only me tell you how to live your life. So now, when it comes back and it bites you, instead of praying and crying and weeping and wailing, you know, it's time to take your punishment like a man. It's time to grow up and act like an adult, instead of a pimply-faced punk. And if you can accept of your punishment and get that behind you, then, and some of you call here, and well, I just got out of the slammer, and you know I'm looking to change my lifestyle, and I'm looking to get out of this system. I've been in Babylon now, and I want to get out. Well, that's just the guy. You just hit the nail right on the head. You're a prime candidate for school. I mean, now we can probably do something for you. Now, the reason for this is because you signed some contracts. You signed some bad deals. You know these warranty cards, you know, in the box? Those are bad contracts. And Social Security is a bad contract. Military enlistment, that's a bad contract. You know, there's a lot of these bad contracts. Now, let me tell you, in Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33, as it relates to these bad contracts, your God says, you shall make no covenant with them nor with their gods, and they shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto you. Right. Now, if you want to serve the gods of the IRS and Social Security and Mutual of Omaha and limited liability, have at it. But when it comes back and bites you, don't pray to Jesus and don't waste your time crying about it. Act like a man. Take your punishment. And then if you got any smarts at all, it's time now to make a change. You know, to grow up and get real. And so I said, don't make any covenants or contracts. There's four statutes that tell you not to do that. Now, if you want the benefits in Exodus 23, verse 22, same chapter, just back up here to verse 22, he says, but if you will indeed obey my voice and do all that I speak, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries. Now, if you want God's angel to be an enemy to the IRS, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, and all of your enemies out there, he'd do that for you, but you got to practice the law. The condition is, you practice my law, I give you these benefits. You don't practice my law, I'm going to kick your you-know-what up one side and down the other. And then the kicker is in Judges 2, verses 1 through 3. Now, our great-great-granddaddies, they didn't listen either. You know, so don't feel bad now if you're just absolutely adamantly opposed now to the Ten Commandments and the statutes, judgments, and commandments of God. That's pretty normal. They were too. And so in Judges chapter 2, an angel of the Eternal came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and I brought you into the land which I swore unto your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you. See, this covenant that he said he had with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that covenant inures to the heirs and assigns forever. Heirs and assigns forever. So all of you Israelites out there in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe, you know, you Frenchmen and you Danes and Norwegians and Germans and you Englishmen, you people are the heirs and assigns forever. And in verse 2 he said, you shall make no league, you shall make no covenants or league with the inhabitants of this land, and you shall throw down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Now why have you done this? You shall make no league, no covenants with these foreign and alien gods of communism, with birth certificates and social security numbers and marriage licenses and you know, all the entrapments that you've gotten yourselves involved with, and then now you're smarting for, and then you call the law school and you say, oh my God, what am I going to do now? I'd tell you, but I can't tell you on the air. You call me on the telephone and I'll tell you in longshoremanese so that there won't be any mistake in what I tell you. Verse 3 says, wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. All right, so there you have it. Isn't that just real special? All right, now let's recapitulate here. You practice the Ten Commandments and the law of God. practice private business and gold and silver and get off this Federal Reserve note credit card kick. And you can practice private business without paying those 14 taxes. Well, not all 14, but most of them. You know, the hidden tax, I got to pay the hidden tax just like you do. You know, when I go in and I pay, you know, I buy something, well, you know, there's a lot of taxes that are attached to it. So 16% of what I create and produce is going out to those hidden taxes. It's in the price of the product. But I've got a product to sell, you know, and my product isn't taxed. And since it isn't taxed, then I don't have to charge what they charge you over here at law school. Now, one time, and I hear this quite often, you know, people say, my God, Gordon, that's too much money and I can't afford it. Do you know what a law school costs? Have you priced a lawyer lately? Get in the yellow pages there and call your local law school and tell them, I'd like to go to law school and see how much the price is. Then call me and tell me if I'm overpriced. Would you please? People, they call up over here all the time and they say, well, my God, you're just outrageous. Cheapest law school in the United States is Brigham Young. 20 years ago, they charged $36,000. I don't charge $36,000 20 years later. Now, don't call me and tell me I'm outrageously overpriced. You price an attorney now, and you'll find out what attorneys are getting. I don't know of any lawyers that aren't getting $100 an hour. You're not getting $100 an hour, but lawyers get $100, $200, $300, $400 an hour. I don't charge $100, $200, $300, or $400 an hour. And so I don't think I'm overpriced, but I do insist that you pay me. No, I don't pay Social Security, and I don't have a Social Security account, and I don't pay income tax, and I earn under the filing minimum, and I used to produce $1 million a year. I used to employ 30 people, and I used to pay about $200,000 a year in taxes to 28 agencies of government from Boise to Washington, and it didn't work for me when I did it. And I don't think it's going to work any better for you when you do it. So I changed that, and I said, well, I'm going to practice the Ten Commandments. Let me just try it and see. It can't be any worse than what I'm doing. Let me use gold and silver. Let me see if my purchasing power is any greater, and let me see if I can live better on less. And I did all of the above. I did all of the above. It worked for me, so I'm going to give you that testimonial. Let me testify to my experience. And I think it'll work for you. Private business is where the money's at. It's not in employment. Retiring on Social Security is peanuts. Chicken feed. I wouldn't get out of bed for $800 a month, let alone go down, sign my soul away, and take the mark of the beast, for crying out loud, for a crummy Social Security check. And by the way, if you're old and on Social Security, call the law school. I'll show you how to go make some money and get off Social Security, even if you're 90. Well, I'm out of time again, kids. So we're going to have to close it off right there. Quit talking about taxes until next time. So let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.